IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. This is Meghan Kani. I work as an assistant program manager at the Takshashila Institution. And today we have Dr. Harshit Kukreja joining us for this exciting episode. So Harshit, how are you?
Hey Meg, all well. How are you?
I have been good, Harshit. So before we begin, I just want to make this announcement that, and I want to bring it to everybody's attention, that applications for Takshashila's one-year postgraduate program in public policy and the three-month graduate certificate in public policy programs are now open. We offer specializations in defense and foreign affairs, tech policy, and advanced public policy. So requesting everyone and all our listeners to ensure that they check out our website for more details about the programs and other important dates. We do also have a new short course coming up, a graduate certificate in liberal arts. So if you are interested to study what liberal arts are and Indian culture and Indian history, do check out our website and sign up for the course. The course begins in February 2023. So Harshit, so in this episode, we'll be talking about what exactly medical crowdfunding is. And all of us have seen those ads on YouTube or probably different OTT platforms, where people are asking to raise money. And there are different agencies, there are different platforms which ask the general public to raise money for somebody's treatment, right? So in today's episode, we are going to talk about what exactly medical crowdfunding is, the history to it, and what are the different aspects to it, and the recent phenomenal growth that medical crowdfunding has seen, especially in developing nations and a lot of Asian countries. And apart from that, the concerns that have been raised by a lot of people who are involved, probably a lot of hospitals and a lot of platforms themselves, the concerns that they are facing now with the rapid growth of medical crowdfunding. And possibly towards the end, we'll also talk about what are the possible solutions? How can policymakers come in? Do we actually need some interventions? Do we not need interventions? We're going to talk about a lot of those stuff. So before we discuss the deep concerns or probably the growth and we follow the trajectory, and you have studied medicine yourself and you have kind of experienced how a hospital functions, you know that there are people who can't afford, there are treatments which are extremely expensive and people cannot afford such treatments, right? So before going on the details, I just want you to give a very brief outline of what medical crowdfunding is and how does it look in India's current context?
Hey, Mahek, sure, yeah. So medical crowdfunding basically is like crowdfunding, taking money from people, like getting funds from people, arranging, raising funds from people to pay for your medical treatments. And this is not even for extreme, very expensive medical treatments. A large majority of the population in our country cannot afford even basic treatments. So people do it to raise money for them also. And obviously for rare diseases, like chronic diseases, like cancers, organ transplant, and maybe some experimental treatments, maybe for very expensive hospital stays, maybe for rehabilitation. So people have been using this from a long time, and this started earlier with newspaper or radio ads, and now with the internet, you can set up a...
When you said that people used to use medical crowdfunding through radio ads and newspaper ads, I just want to highlight this one point. I don't know if a lot of people have seen the movie The Sky is Pink, and it released a couple of years back, and it showed in one of the scenes they actually show how an Indian family goes to the United Kingdom to go to London, and then they try to crowdfund money for their daughter's treatment, which is still a very rare disease and it was extremely expensive, through radio. And there was something called the Sun Radio and how the communities are putting in money for the daughter's treatment. So I know, like, and it's a true story, right? So we know that crowdfunding, I know it's become very popular and now everybody started to use it because of internet and like its widespread availability. But like you correctly mentioned it, like how there has been a growth. There were these newspaper ads, there were these radio ads, but now with the availability of internet on such a large level, it's possible that everybody I'm still saying people who can have access, there are individuals and NGOs and communities and basically anyone who has some kind of available access can crowdfund money. So of course, there has been a shift.
Yeah, there has been a shift. Earlier, it was not available to everybody. Now, because of being online and everybody coming online, the growth in money raised through crowdfunding and the number of campaigns which are run have like increased manifold. So this is obviously because of a lot of new treatments which have come, which are now available, if we only talk about India, which are now available to a lot of people, but they don't have the funds to pay for it. So the increase in online crowdfunding has been because of that. I think the number is, correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere around 3 times the growth is.
Yeah, it's actually more than 3 times. Even the number of reports, the number of cases which have been crowdfunded every year are like doubling each month because there are new platforms coming up. Even the revenue that is generated, the money that's been collected from public, it's crossing triple fold and it's trajected to grow like more than 5 times in coming years. So that brings me to my first set of questions, Harshit. Like, I was reading about the data, and of course, we'll talk about India's growth in crowdfunding. Of course, there has been, like, even during the COVID itself, there were more than 1,200 medical campaigns that were started with just one crowdfunding platform. And now the growth is 3x growth average year. But I was reading the data, and it was shown how, of course, medical crowdfunding has grown in across almost all countries, but there has been a special high rise in the most poorest and the developing nations. And of course, we know that there is a reason behind it. And I'd like you to probably tell the listeners about why, especially in developing nations or underdeveloped nations, the medical crowdfunding has taken over and what is that it's happening in the current scenario.
Yeah, so basically, first of all, out-of-pocket expenses have been increasing. So because you have to pay for a lot of people are pushed into poverty because of medical expenses in India and in other developing countries. The cost of medical treatment is increasing. We now have new treatments which are successfully able to help people, but they're expensive because you need money for drugs, you need money for hospitals, you need money for doctors, you need money for a lot of things, and you also need money for other non-medical expenses. So the expenses have been increasing. But people's purchasing power have not been increasing at that pace.
So yeah, also because everybody is, sorry to cut you off here, but everybody's been trying to talk about universal health coverage and like everybody should receive affordable and accessible treatment. And we have been talking, it's actually one of our sustainable development goals, but we know that the harsh reality is, and the truth is, we really don't have it. And if you look at India also, we don't have that kind of resources also to provide UHC to everyone, right? To be very frank and to be very upfront about these things. I know if we probably try to paint a very utopian picture, we also want that every person in this country, irrespective of the class, caste, creed, race or gender, should have like proper access to treatment, health treatments. But we know that's not the picture and that's not the reality. So there's a lack of coverage, there's a lack of health facilities, there is a lack of insurance facilities, there's a lack of public health facilities and everything. And that's, we know what happened in COVID. There were hospital scarcity, there were bed scarcity, ambulances were in there. There aren't enough doctors, there aren't enough nurses to serve people. We still aren't reaching the numbers as specified by WHO. So we know there's a problem behind it. And to add up to it, as you mentioned, like people do not have the purchasing power. People do not have that kind of money to spend on their health because they have their daily needs to meet of like probably food, water and sanitation. And that's why in a lot of developing nations, crowdfunding has come up as a new formula which can help save, if not millions of lives, at least hundreds of lives. because some people can pay, right? You know, in every country, there are some people who can spend some kind of money to probably save someone's life. I know we'll discuss the ethical dilemmas related to it in some part of the episode, but like, it's how it's taken over, which also brings me to another point, Harshit. Like, I was reading how in India, medical crowdfunding is not only just used for like treatment, it's of course majority of that it is, but there are these platforms which are trying to collect money for causes that indirectly affect a person's health. For example, there are something for clean water and clean sanitation, right? And the platforms are trying to raise money for that. And of course, we know access to clean water and sanitation in the end affects a person's overall well-being and overall health, right? So do you want to talk about a lot? Like, do you want to talk about how medical crowdfunding has been used for research, medical crowdfunding has been used for these causes, and how it's just not to be what we see on YouTube ads on a daily basis?
Yeah, so before I answer this question, I have a sort of a this. You were talking about how India is a resource-starved country. So this is a very back of the envelope calculation. So India's last year's, this year's health budget was somewhere around 83,000 crores. And our population is 130 crores. This is the Union Health level, Health Ministry's budget, Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. So that translates to about 650 rupees per person. So this is the amount per year. This is the amount that the government is willing or is able to spend, the central government. Although health is a predominantly a state subject, with a lot of responsibilities falling into the state, but a lot of sort of health funding comes from the center. So it is only somewhere around 650 rupees. So we are a very resource starved country. We cannot afford to give good healthcare coverage to everybody.
Yeah.
So, and coming back to your point,
and that's also true for a lot of other developing and underdeveloped nations. It's also true for a lot of war-torn countries, right? There are so many countries like Syria or Libya, Afghanistan, or now Ukraine, who do not have, because all their resources are probably going towards saving the lives of people on a daily basis, that they do not have such resources to spend enough on health. And that's why medical crowdfunding has rapidly and tremendously taken over in such parts of the world.
Yeah, Mehak, I think this should give us a good sort of a overview of our situation if we are comparing. Obviously, we are nowhere as bad as Syria or places like
Ukraine,
that. Yeah, if we are comparing ourselves to them, so that gives a very nice picture of our healthcare. Yeah,
correct. And I know like we have improved in, of course, whatever past decades, but like, let's just be very upfront about it that we do not have resources and there is a resource scarcity on all levels. There are efforts lacking, there is money lacking, there are human resource lacking, there is infrastructure lacking. And that's why, of course, and we also know health research in India is comparatively very low than a lot of other nations, right? And that's why manufacturing is low, manufacturing of a lot of vaccines are low. So that's why people are not able to save lives, right? And that's when medical crowdfunding just acts as a
godsend. Before you go ahead, one correction, I think. Yeah. So we manufacture a lot of vaccines. We just don't innovate a lot.
Use it for India's population.
That too. Yeah. We export a lot. We are one of the leading manufacturers of vaccines from all over the world. We export a lot to Africa and other countries, but we don't. A lot of them, we don't use it for ourselves and we don't innovate a lot. And yeah, there's a resource crunch.
Okay. Yeah. And like, coming back to my original question, what do you think about like medical crowdfunding being used for other causes which directly or like indirectly affect human's health?
Yeah, I think that is an important use case for medical crowdfunding. Because even if, for instance, in a lot of hospitals, for instance, in maybe Delhi and in a lot of states, the hospitals are basically free to use. So there are no medical expenses, except if you don't find any services in the hospitals, if you don't find any drugs in the hospital, if you don't find any investigations that you can get done in the hospitals, everything else is free to use. There's no bed charges, there's no registration charges, no consultation, no ICU charges, etc. So Yeah, crowdfunding is quite important because you also have to understand the person who is sick and the person who is taking care of them is also spending their sort of, is not going to work. They're also not like getting some amount of some salary from maybe some fund from anywhere. They also have to spend on lodging. They also have to spend on food. There's also added stress. Maybe that person was caring for somebody else. So there's maybe they're paying for childcare. Maybe their children are missing school. So there are a lot of expenses which are non-medical in nature, but they form a significant chunk of being ill. So crowdfunding, I think, is an important use case for that because the government, at least at this point, is not willing to or is not able to pay for all these expenses.
Yeah, thanks, Ashit. I think we'll pause here for a quick break. And then probably after the break, we'll talk about the recent concerns that a lot of people have raised. There have been cases in India and abroad related to medical crowdfunding, which of course creates doubts in minds of people about whether we should use it or not. And then probably we'll talk about some solutions, if possible, if any, and if needed any. So listeners, we'll see you right after this short break. Hi listeners, welcome after a break. In today's episode, we have Dr. Harshit Kukreja with us and we are speaking about, discussing things about different aspects of medical crowdfunding, the growth it has seen in the past few years, especially in the developing and underdeveloped nations. We'll also talk about India. And now continuing to the conversation before the break, we are going to talk about how there have been some concerns that have been raised. There have been cases, both legal and ethical cases. And what are those and what are the possible solutions if needed? So Harshit, I'm sure you would know about this case, which happened, I think, a couple of months back about this one crowdfunding platform, which is one of the biggest crowdfunding platform. And I'd like to resist myself from taking the name, but they posted something on how they saved somebody's life by crowdfunding money and like for a particular ailment, right? And it was put on Twitter, and then how some other doctor who is working towards that ailment, they spoke about how that money that was raised was actually 5 times to what is needed in even in the most expensive and corporate hospitals. So, and then the hospital were asked for documentation and they said that we didn't have a patient like that. We never had a patient like that. And then the crowdfunding platform put out some documentation. They put out some receipts and invoices, and then the hospital refused to answer. So we know there are cases like this. There are chances of fake invoices. There are, of course, chances of fake people and fake illnesses. So, of course, and I'm sure there are like 10 out of 100, 10 of 1,000 of those cases. But like, what do you want to say about it? Like, how often do you think it happens? And what is the exact scenario? Since you have worked in a hospital, do you think that happens on a frequent basis? And if like it's wrong, right? I'm putting my money, even if I'm putting like 10 rupees of my money, my aim, my intention is to save somebody's life. But if the person doesn't even exist, how fair it is to me as a person, as a donor who's giving my hard-earned money?
Yeah, so I think these are certain exceptional cases. This is not the norm. And a lot of crowdfunding platforms, they have put in safeguards to prevent instances like this. If you look at any medical campaign which is running, they have documents from the hospital, they have documents about the illness, they have bill estimates and a lot of other things. And a lot of times the money goes straight into the account of the hospital. So unless, I think at this point, unless the hospital is involved or the platform is somehow involved or somehow negligent, or the hospital is involved or negligent, the chances of cases like this happening is quite remote. And maybe the follow-up, I think the follow-up, our discussion on this topic previously was that, do we want government regulation on this? And I think currently the platforms have made the regulations so stringent to avoid cases like this. There are a lot of people who require this, the people who are among the poorest, the people who require a lot of money because they have a lot of bills to pay, medical bills to pay, the people who are not as easily able to like get funds because they are not well connected to the formal sector, they don't have collateral, or they don't know kin and families with surplus funds. So these people, they have excluded because they are not able to get on these platforms. And if we advocate for more stringent regulations and more stringent, maybe an intervention on the government's behalf, I think that would be counterintuitive and that would not be productive. So yeah, these cases happen, but these are on the margin, not the norm.
Yeah. And like one more thing, Arshit, like I know we were discussing this a couple of days back. You know how earlier, before this huge boom of medical crowdfunding in the country, there were these hospitals, private hospitals, who used to give treatments on discounted prices for people who couldn't afford them. Now they have a loophole. Now they know that they just connected with medical crowdfunding. There are teams in hospitals themselves who just try to persuade people to go for crowdfunding. And that's how the loopholes peepin. And that's how people just step in. Like, there are benefits for medical crowdfunding platforms. There are benefits for the hospital. So what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, so this is all anecdotal, right? I don't have any hard data to back this up. But I think some hospitals and some healthcare facilities, a lot of hospitals have these teams which help you get onto crowdfunding platforms. So what they do is, earlier when they used to work with people of not that good financial background, and they used to give maybe discounts, maybe some, they used to write some part of the bill off. But now they first try to push the person to get on these platforms and try to raise as money they want, as much as the bill. They want to get maximum of the bill paid through the crowdfunding part. So because they don't want to like write it off. So yeah, I think that is a phenomena that we are seeing, is rising.
So Harshit, now we know, like, of course there is one side of cons, whereas there is probably misapplication, there is impersonation, there is fake illness, there is faking of documentation, there is failure to deliver promised records and rewards. But on the other side, there is another problem. So I was reading these newspaper articles and these research papers, and there was this one study that was published in JAMA that also finds out that how there are, and it's most particularly about the US. I didn't come across anything that has happened in India. That can also be because it hasn't happened, and it can also be because there's lack of evidence and there's lack of research in the field. But I was reading about this case in US, how there is this huge medical crowdfunding platform which tries to, of course, give medical treatments to people who need it the most, but it's by most unproven and potentially dangerous treatments. For example, homeopathy or naturopathy for cancer treatment. And for example, of course, that's one part. And of course, about how they also try to persuade people to go for medical crowdfunding, but the treatments that they received are unproven and it's actually in the third phase of clinical trials or the final stages of clinical trials. So my question is of two points. First of all, what do we do about all of these things? Like, we know that cancer cannot be treated through homeopathy, right? That's one aspect to it. My second aspect is coming from a very moralistic, ethical point of view, that, okay, we know the person is in a vulnerable position at that point in time when they need money for treatment of themselves or their closest family member. And how fair is it to tell them at that point in time? Of course, I'm saying it's going to be consensual. Of course, they would have been taking consent. But at that point in time, how fair it is to ask them to sign up for a treatment which is probably unproven and which can be potentially dangerous. And because we know, like, out of 10 people that were studied for some stem cell study and they were given those treatment for some brain injury or some brain therapy, and like two of them died. So we know there was a potential dangerous, and we know there are consequences related to it. how do we solve it? I hope that it's not happening in India, or even if it is happening in India, how fair it is. So I just want you to like probably share your views on what do you think of all of these things.
Yeah. So, hey, yeah. So about the first point, I don't think there's a need to stop, because if you're allowing the general public to get naturopathy or homeopathy treatment, which we know is a pseudoscience and doesn't work. So I don't get the logic that as long as people are using their own money, they can get their treatment. And if they are crowdfunding that money, they're not allowed to. So that doesn't make
sense. One question here. Like, first of all, it's not their own money. It's somebody else's money. I have a question, like, and I haven't seen it in like a lot of ads. In some of the ads, I have seen it. But, you know, in some of the ads, they don't mention what the treatment is going to be. So I'm coming from a point of a person who's spending that kind of money. So I know what the disease is. And I know who the probably receiver or the fund is. But in some of the ads, I haven't seen what kind of treatments that they are given. And I know probably then there is a link to it, but there is a huge page of documentation and a lot of people would not read it because they're forcing, okay, they feel bad about it. They feel empathetic about it. And they want to give like even 100 rupees to the person. They would want to give it. My question is how fair it is to them also. For example, if I am seeing a person who's dying of cancer, I'll give money to them. But if I'm aware that they are okay, they are given treatment through homeopathy, I might not spend money. I'll probably put in 100 rupees to somebody else whom I am sure that the treatment is more valuable than treatment is going to be more successful. So my point is that like, should like medical crowdfunding platforms try to be very open about what the treatments are?
Yeah, I think, I don't know about US. I have not looked at any sort of, for instance, GoFundMe pages in US for medical crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. But at least in India, you get a fair idea on what the treatment would be and what kind of modality they will use. Because you see documentation from the hospital. For instance, it says Apollo hospitals or Fortis hospitals or whatever XYZ hospitals. So you know that this is a modern medicine based.
It should be like mentioned on the face, like in the ad itself, because of course there is some kind of sensationalism involved in it. So that's what I said. Like, I'm sure there are documentations, there is a website, and if I want to go check, but should we...
No, it's on the page. It's on the main page only. You don't need to like go to...
Those YouTube ads, you know, those come before you play a video or like some podcast you're playing at that time. Because as moment you sign up, as moment as you click, they directly lead you to the payment page, right? So I am asking ki, are you like, should we also put like, what exactly the treatment is going to be and the percentage successful chances or whatever is possible on the, in the ad itself. Like people are very, very aware. Of course, you know, otherwise it is like, okay, probably, you know, and how ads that is written like smallest of it, it's written towards the end of the ad and people are not able to see because nobody's going to pay attention to it, but they want to buy the product.
Yeah. Basically, this is the equivalent of I didn't read the conditions. Yeah. Term
that's
conditions.
My
yeah.
question is that should we do it? Is it like an ethical question? Should we not do it?
Well, so logically, there should be no information asymmetry, like in these cases at least. But I don't think you can, anyway, the government or the regulator can force anybody and tell them what to put in this instance, what to put in their ads. Maybe what I've seen over the years is they have developed sort of they have self-regulated. And the ads are like much more, at least the web ads, I'm not talking about YouTube or maybe Instagram, at least the link ad on which you click and the landing page, it is quite clear. It says that, oh, so this is the XYZ disease. This is the name of the patient. This is the age. This is how much money they have raised. This is the breakdown. And you click on an image and there's a sort of a bill, estimated bill from the hospital or the healthcare facility.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe if taking you directly to the payment page, there should be some kind of
portal given of what the treatment is going to be, what kind
of
time.
I think it also, if it should also be on you, if you are like paying money to, if you are paying your money to somebody else, you should at least go on the link and check where it is going. And
saying people will not do it. I mean, of course, it's a consumer awareness matter as well, though. But I'm sure people will not do it. Like people buy products without seeing like what's written like in the smallest of alphabets.
But Mac, I'm in this medical crowdfunding. I'm basically not in favor of any kind of more government regulation.
No, I'm not saying there are government regulations. I'm just saying should like medical crowdfunding take an ethical stand themselves, that they should be very open and upfront about the treatments. That's what my
point. Ideally, they should.
I'm not saying, I also know that if you try to regulate it more, it's going to be counterproductive and probably people who are getting benefited will not get benefited.
So parallelly, so there are a few microfinancing groups in India which crowdfund money for instance, if you want, so there's a, you land at the campaign page and you see this 10,000 rupees is for this woman in Chhattisgarh. She wants to buy a buffalo. So it's very clear. It's very succinct. It's a one-liner. And if you want to pay your 100 rupees or 500 rupees or 1,000 rupees to help that woman buy a buffalo, it's, you can do it. So it's very clear. Then this I have seen across a lot of microfinancing crowdfunding platforms. So yeah, maybe a succinct one-liner which says, so this is for this person, for this disease, and for this treatment.
Yeah. Yes,
because I also had a discussion with some of my colleagues which said that, so this is a very, I don't sort of like condone this position. I don't take this position at all, and I will fund it. But a lot of my colleagues didn't want to fund palliative care. They were like, I think my money would be spent better if they pay for somebody's treatment and there's a chance of them getting a cure. I would pay for palliative care if I have those funds and if I'm able to, because I believe that is an important part of the person's life. But yeah, it should be the person's choice and information should be freely available, and that will help in increasing the trust in these platforms and increasing the funds available to them.
Yeah. So Ashish, before we wrap up, I have just one thing saying, like, I know we have discussed the concerns. I know like there are treatments which are not proven or probably are not like in their final stages of clinically tested. And like there are the concerns, people not getting documentation, that there are fake documentation, there are fake illnesses. I just want to hear an answer in a very, probably in a very black and white scenario. It's a very yes and no question. And do you think that governments and policymakers should step in to probably regulate the functioning of medical crowdfunding platforms or any kind of crowdfunding platforms?
So I don't like these kinds of dichotomy questions. But no, I don't think the government should and will be able to regulate these platforms. I think eventually when we are in a better state and we have more money, and our health infrastructure is better, maybe the need for these platforms will decrease. But I don't think the government should interfere in the functioning of these platforms. First of all, they don't make a large part of healthcare funding at this stage. So and they're also, to a certain extent, self-regulating, at least till now. That is the trend we are seeing. So I don't think the government should be stepping in and disturbing this ecosystem which is established, and I don't think the government will be able to, and there's no good policy solution to this.
Okay, so cool, thanks. I think we can wrap up the episode for today, Harshit. It was again lovely having you, and it was good to have the conversation with you. I'm glad we could discuss both the good and bad sides of medical crowdfunding. But of course, I have been very repetitive about the fact how medical crowdfunding themselves should be very ethical and should probably see what they're doing. But whatever, in our discussion, it's another point that was raised. It's like consumers should also be aware. Even the people who are funding the money, who are giving the money, even if it's a minute number of like probably 10 rupees, they should also be aware of where they're putting their money in, and they should know, there should be no information asymmetry, and that's how it's going to function properly. So Ashit, thanks once again for being with us today, and to all our listeners, thanks for tuning in. I hope you liked the episode, and I wish that you'll continue listening to our coming episodes of All Things Policy, where we'll bring you some interesting topics related to what's happening in the areas of defense, foreign affairs, tech, health, and much more, actually. So see you guys. Thank you.
Hey, Mehak, thanks for having me. Thank you, listeners, for chiming in.
Thanks, Harsh.
Bye-bye.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.